A word from the wise, it's all smoke. Just smoke. I've seen it all. What's left to do when you've been king? The sun comes up, the sun goes down, over and over. Everything that's happened before will happen again, time and time again. This is what I learned from my experiment. I've had the big house, the big yard with the big pool. I've had faithful servants. I've had beautiful women. I've had wonderful children. I've had money more than I've known what to do with. I've had wine, plenty more than I can handle. I've had all there is to have in this world. Everything under the sun. It's all meaningless. It's all vanity. It's all smoke. I just didn't know it at first.
Morning, Austin Oaks. Have you ever noticed how biased your mind is sometimes? I mean, have you ever noticed how you think you're always right? Let's just start there. Right? I mean, your political group, they're in power, they're out of power right now, and you know your group is right, and the other group is wrong to complain the way they're complaining, right? As that goes. You know, bias, I'm going to share a little bit about this, but it's a strategic piece of our conversation as we're wrestling with Ecclesiastes. I, some years ago, like our third date or so, Jody, I don't remember, it was pretty early on, we'd gone to a special showing of a movie, so I had to buy these tickets separately. In some context, and the tickets were on one strip, and so we're waiting in line, you know, one, two separate tickets, we're waiting in line, and we're waiting and talking, and I suddenly look down, and I go, oh no, Jody, where's your ticket? Because I obviously was going to the movie, you know. Or maybe you're like the guy they found, kind of a Robinson Crusoe guy, on an island. He'd been there for decades. And they're getting the tour, you know, before he leaves. And he's showing the buildings he built. And he said, you know, here's my dining hall. This is where I ate my meals. And here's like a commissaire where I kept all my supplies. And there's my dorm, you know, sleeping. And over here, my chapel. I had church every week. I said, well, what's that other building over there? He said, that's the church I used to go to. We all can have that kind of bias in our orientation that we are the ones who are right. A Dr. Cordelia Fine, Cambridge, UK, wrote a book called A Mind of Its Own. And it's about our brains. And the first chapter is called The Vain Brain. The Vain Brain. And this vain brain, what they do is they have all these experiments these social psychologists have done on our orientations. And what will happen, they'll, you know, make them put together little origami stuff or little Lego things or whatever. And then you have a chance to buy your own stuff. And like on a scale, you know, 5 to 1, we'll buy our own stuff and take it home. It doesn't look like anything compared to buying somebody else's thing. There's an orientation, a bias in us, this vain brain where we're busy trying to look at things in a positive way, to feel good about stuff, to overrate our strengths and underrate. Well, you know this. You know when other people mistreat you, you know that they are up to no good, don't you? And you know what their motives are, but when it comes to you doing something bad, they just didn't understand. You didn't have a choice, right? It's that thing. She writes, if you bear with me, she says, as we draw toward the end of this chapter, there are two morals to be drawn. One, never trust social psychologists. Two, because they're tricking you the whole time. Oh, yeah, this is a real thing, you know. No, it's not. It's a trick. Two, never trust your brain. We probably could go home in good shape at this point, but there's a little more. She adds, they both manipulate your perception of reality, thus tricking you into embarrassing vanities. Of course, in the case of social psychologists, those vanities are then permanently recorded in order that other professionals may be entertained by them. So perhaps you should trust social psychologists even less than you do your own brain. But don't feel too angry with your vain brain for shielding you from the truth. There is, in fact, a category of people who get unusually close to the truth about themselves and the world. Their self-perceptions are more balanced. They assign responsibility for success and failure more even-handedly. And their predictions for the future are more realistic. These people are a living testimony to the dangers of self-knowledge. They are the clinically depressed. I'm quoting her. She goes on to quote Martin Seligman and says, this last thing I'll read to you, he said, for a moment, has identified a pessimistic explanatory style that's common in depressed people. He said, when pessimists fail, they blame themselves and think that the fault is in themselves. I'm stupid, I'm useless, and it'll last forever and will affect everything they do. This is a far cry from the sorts of explanations that happy, self-serving people give for failure. Look, I'm not minimizing this. In fact, part of what I want to talk to you about is depression, because it is strategic in understanding the book of Ecclesiastes. I don't know if you noticed, but some of it is not the feel-good part of the Bible. I've had not a few of you say, you know, I've always avoided this book. I can imagine. You know, it's just not that feel-good thing. I don't watch replays of Alabama-Clemson game, you know, because it's just, it's not a feel-good thing for me, right? If you think about it, and what I want to help you understand today is it is very important to have both this kind of vain brain orientation that sugarcoats reality a little bit and this ability to look at things for what they are. Because if you can begin to master this, then you can actually get to a place that what happens around you isn't what determines your happiness, your joy, your fulfillment. In fact, today's message is about how to enjoy life. That's what we're getting to. We're getting to the good stuff now, finally, right? And in thinking this through, I thought about, you know, Jesus in particular. He had this ability. I don't know if you ever have read much about Jesus, but he was like amazing, you know? As Byron said, you know, if he wasn't God, he should have been. That's how God should be, right? So here he is. They get in a boat. They're going across the seas. They have this terrible storm. You remember it? That day, evening had come. He said to them, let's go across the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them to the boat just as he was, and other boats were with him, and a great windstorm came, and waves were breaking in the boat, and so the boat was already filling, but he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. Wouldn't you like that? Just storms and insanity and crazy and wild stuff going on around you, and you're catching a few Z's. What the disciples do? Do you know that story? They were freaking out. I think the way you say it nowadays, right? They just had this mind frick, you know, going on. They were just, it's all over. We're sinking. Don't you care what's wrong with you? You know, vain brain. We're right. Why was Jesus calm? As Jody said, because he can get up and stop the weather. Well, okay, that's good too, right? Jesus actually has perspective. The question is, did these disciples ever learn? Did any of them ever learn to sleep in the midst of something bad? Because that's the test. I mean, if you're going to be like Jesus, you better know how to sleep. Acts chapter 12. We get a little insight into a guy named Peter. I won't bore you with it all, but basically he's been put in jail. He's going to get beaten. He'll leave and be rejoicing about that. Never mind that issue. But in here he says, now when Herod, verse 6 of chapter 12, was about to bring him out, on that very night, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, and sentries before the door were guarding the prison. So you got two people, chains, sentries, guards, and what's Peter doing? Finally looking like Jesus, asleep on the cushion or the stone. Do you want that? Would you like that? I am here to offer the starter kit on how you can get there. I'm here to give you that via Solomon's wisdom. If you would like that ability, today's your lucky day. Turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 2. So as we make our way to Ecclesiastes, I want to mention something else very quickly. I am going to do this message a little different. I want to model something to you. And what I want to model is how to share truth in life moments. This is a very strategic thing to do. You want to learn to share truth in life moments. So I'm in Uganda a few years ago. My son's with me. We are there, first trip. We're in Kampala. We're in the guest house. It's kind of up on a hill a little bit. And I call my son over to the window the next morning. I said, hey, come over here. And I said, what do you see out there? And he looked and he said, well, I see a lot of trash over here. And there's rusted machines over there. And there's like a pit somebody dug out and some rusted machines there too. I said, it's pretty trashy, isn't it? He said, oh, it's awful. I said, how do you think that happened? He said, I have no idea. I said, I think it's because somebody left a towel on the floor in the bathroom one time. We communicate. I got 10 days. You know, I don't want to start fighting towels and stuff, right? Moments come along in our lives, and in those moments, we have the opportunity to take something and open it up. And when you look at a passage, and you, when somebody has a need in their life, and you're taking a scripture and you're showing it to them, you don't do it the way scholars do it. You don't say, well, you need to understand the subject and the complement here. There's design about God, design about man. And so this narrative involving Moses is teaching us something about the nature of our relationship with God. And curiously, it breaks down into three exact points, moving from where Moses was to moving where he went and where he wound up, or something like, I'm making this up, you know. But we don't do that. You don't even do context. Somebody says, I am anxious. And you go to where? Philippians 4. Let me show you a verse about anxiety. Cast your cares on the Lord. But before I show that, let's look at the context. Genesis 1:1. So, in the beginning. No, what you do is you are trying to share the key elements, the what will impact that human being from the Word of God so they can take it to heart and take that verse and reflect and chew on it as well. And that's what I want to do this morning with you, if you'd give me permission to do that. I want to show you that there are three simple things you need to understand from this passage about how to enjoy life. If someone came up to me, in fact, the kids kind of did this kind of stuff, well, people, counseling, all kinds of stuff, would say things like this, how do I deal with this? How do I deal with that? Right? I, growing up, had pretty serious, in my mind, my vain brain, depression. So anything I just read about depression, don't think I'm minimizing the issue, the nature of what's going on. I grew up and, you know, I won't bore you with, you know, dysfunction is not a competition. So you got your story, I got mine, so we're not going to compete here. But wouldn't that be a great bumper sticker? Would somebody do that someday? So I'd send one to Jerry Springer. But the nature of my depression was, I mean, as a kid, I really didn't want to be on the planet that much for long periods of time. And then I got distracted and maybe better, And then in college, it got worse, and I was in misery. And if you've ever been there, you know, it's just awful. You just can't think clear, see clear. And I became hyper cynical. Everything was no good. I remember a friend gave me a test on extroversion, introversion, and it was for a psychology class or something like that. And I scored like perfectly in the middle. And if you know anything about me, I'm very controlled here because, well, they're filming me. So very calm, very controlled, right? But I'm not an engineer. You know, the engineers kind of came on to me last week, little correction, right? So I'm thinking, you know, the difference between an extroverted engineer and an introverted one? An extroverted engineer will look at somebody else's shoes, right? I'm just kidding. I'm on your team, man. You're my boys. I'm telling you, I lived in Midland, Texas, 19 years. Everybody I know is an engineer, you know, or wants to be. Extroversion, introversion, depression. I was sitting there in this fog, and God in his kindness got me out of it. And I'm going to share with you at the end what happened to begin to get me out of it. Solomon looks pretty depressed to me. Last week we learned, so I hated life because what is done under the sun was grievous to me, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. Sort of a definition. Vanity, striving after the wind, it's a waste. What's it all about, Alfie? You know, there's some song out there like that. I hated life. Now our passage. I hated all my toil. I hated all my toil. And he goes into this. This is crucial. If you don't understand and appreciate what is going on with Solomon in his honest, cynical description of his experiment and learning, you won't make sense of what you're getting at, because this message is about how to enjoy your life. You're fixing to walk out of here and know, do y'all know that word fixing? That's an Alabama term, fixing, about to, it's coming up soon, like fixing a cake or a pie or television. So you are about to experience the opportunity, if you grasp what we're getting at, to enjoy life. You ready for that? Three things. You come to me, you say, how do I enjoy life? I said, this passage is going to tell you. And there are three simple things. And the first thing is you got to understand and embrace that life is all about cycles. It's cyclical. The world is cyclical. It's cycle, 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 cycle. If you don't understand this, you're going to struggle in life. I didn't understand it for years about sleep. You know, sleep. The cycle is you sleep, then you wake up, you stay awake for a while, then you go back to sleep. It does it over and over and over again. Have you noticed that? I don't sleep. I don't like sleep. I don't get the point of sleep. Sleep irritates me. I don't even like it when I'm asleep. I'm sitting there hoping it's like past 3 a.m. so I can get up and be alive a little more. Because sleep is like not existing except watching movies in my head I can't change the channel on. There's nothing likable in my orientation with sleep. Jody, on the other hand, has the gift of sleep. It's the most amazing thing. She never has any issue sleeping. She goes to sleep an hour before me. She gets up an hour after me, right? I, being actually kind of a nerdy engineer, calculated how many hours awake I am more per year than she is. And I'm not counting the sleep time. I'm just like wake days, like 16 hours of wake time. So that's a wake day in my nerdy little engineering mind. And so in wake days, I'm awake a year pretty much. I mean, I'm awake a month longer than she is every year. And then you go further and you find out if I lived to 90, in wake years, I'm going to actually have been alive 146 years or something like that. All of you are sleeping your lives away. Oh, I made it to 90. You're asleep for half of it. What did that matter? That's 45 in wake years. You're just a kid. Enough of that. You get my point. It's a cycle. It's a cycle. You say, I deviated from the notes just then, just a little bit. So it's a cycle. Optimism and pessimism, it's a cycle. Emotions, it's a cycle. Work, leisure, what he's about to tell us about, it's a cycle. You work, and then you take leisure. And then you do your leisure, and then you go work. And if you don't get this, you're going to hurt yourself. Like sleep. I used to try to make myself sleep. I've had doctors help me sleep. I've had sleep specialists. I've taken Benadryl. I've taken melatonin. I've taken stuff, you know, you buy on the street. I've done all kinds of stuff just to get some sleep because everybody said you needed it. And then I noticed my sweet wife is amazing. She had this different philosophy of sleep. Her philosophy was when she's sleepy, she goes to bed. And then when she's through, she'd get up. And I started doing that. And I found out I need about 5-6 hours sleep. Just the way it goes. But I was fighting against it. How about emotions? You know, some of you, we have this thing out here nowadays. It's about everything is racism. I don't know if you noticed this, but everything's racist, you know? We're going to see McDonald's calling Burger King racist because they're against the Big Mac someday. Nobody even knows what the term means anymore, and I don't want to minimize that issue. It is a big deal. But my goodness, you're just so biased against stuff like emotions. I'm pro all emotions. You're not. You're all about, I want to feel all the good things, and ooh, the bad things are evil. And if you don't understand cycles, then when the bad things come, you'll fight with them. And when you fight with emotion, you just make it stick around longer. Same with a person. You argue with a person, they stay longer. Have you noticed that? If you just go, you're right, you could go on with life. But you got that vain brain, so. Look, here's how life goes. If you want to know about the emotion, here's. You feel good, and then later, you feel bad. And then a little bit later, you're going to feel good again. And then a little bit later, you're going to feel bad again. And it like keeps doing this over and over until you die. There's the story. Hey, you get what you pay for. That's all I got to say, you know? So here are the cycles. Go with me to verse 18 of Ecclesiastes 2. He says here, I hated all my toil in which I toiled under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to a man who will come after me. And who knows whether he's going to be a wise one or a fool. Yet he will be master of all for which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. So I turned about and gave my heart up to despair over all the toil of my labors under the sun. Because sometimes a person who has toiled with wisdom and knowledge and skill must leave everything to be enjoyed by someone who didn't toil for it at all. This is also vanity and a great evil. What is a man from all the toil and striving of heart in which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow and his work of vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This is also vanity. He's not sleeping because he's worrying. I'm not sleeping because I want to get up. This vexation is that no matter what you put together and you get it all and you acquire massive amounts and then you're going to die and leave it to whom? A fool? Who knows? Family? Who knows? You leave it to them and Solomon didn't kind of push this point out, but let's say you leave it to a wise person and then they leave it to a fool. You know, eventually I think your stuff's going to get to a fool, just statistically, right? That's depressing. But that's reality. And that's where Solomon is. And by the way, in 2, and there in verse 10, he said, my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And then he finds over in 18, I have no pleasure in my toil. That's a cycle. That's our point, right? Vanity of vanities, and he's dealing with this reality. The first piece is you've got to accept and understand the cyclical nature of reality. It'll do magic for you. Here's number 2. The second thing that you want to hold on to and appreciate is that you want to be a God pleaser. A God pleaser. Solomon finally actually brings God into the formula here, into the way in which you enjoy life. Watch this. Verse 24, there's nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil, as also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner, he's given the business of gathering, collecting only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and a striving after the wind. And so Solomon gives us two categories, a God pleaser and a sinner. I know we're all sinners, right? I get it. But in this sense, it's something different. It's a person who is not actually orientating their life to the purposes of God. A God pleaser has that orientation. Like, what would actually jazz God that you're doing? See, I could ask that right now. What'd you do this week that might possibly jazz God? What'd he like? That would be the nature of God pleasing. I'll tell you the secret. You might ask, how do you please God? How do you go about it? We could think of it ethically. That means like doing the right stuff and not doing the bad stuff, you know, that kind of stuff. That's sort of how we tend to think about it. But what a Hebrews chapter 11, verse 6 says about all these Old Testament folks, it's right in this same game. He says, and without faith, it's impossible to please God. For he who comes to God must believe he is and that he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So in that passage, it's you please God by seeking the Lord, right? By seeking him. I mean, you're here. This is a pretty good sign, right? You know, or half of you. The other half, I know the other person drugged, but it's okay. So, you know, we're seeking, right? And then it's a life of faith. It's faith. What's faith? Faith is taking God at his word. He says something and you go, okay, I buy that. That's believing. That's trusting. It could be on anything. God said, hey, give some time to something. And then you go do it. That's faith. That pleases God, right? God said, stop doing this. And you go, okay. And he empowers you to stop. That's faith. This faith game shows up in how we live. And that is what pleases God. So it's not only understanding the cycles, but it's being in the category of the God pleaser, because in the God pleaser category, what happens is stuff will come around and God will bless you with it, and you're getting a blessing of the third point. The third point is simply this. You and I and anyone that's in pursuit of being a God pleaser is to enjoy our work and enjoy our leisure as God permits. Is to enjoy our work and enjoy our leisure. We read over it and go back and look at it again. There's nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? I mean, look, do you enjoy your leisure? Do you stop and enjoy community and family and a moment to have a meal? You know, do you enjoy that? Because if you do, you're going to enjoy it more when you recognize it's from God's hand that he lets you even enjoy it. How about your work? You enjoy your work? Sinner? No, I'm kidding. Sorry. Seem grumpy. Look. You have been invited by God as a God pleaser to enjoy your work. If you don't enjoy your work, there are a couple of things up. Warren Buffett, I read this somebody this week, and they said, Jimmy Buffett said that? No, Warren Buffett, there can, but this is not Jimmy, this would be Warren. There comes a time when you ought to start doing what you want. Take a job that you love. You will jump out of bed in the morning. I think you are out of your mind if you keep taking jobs that you don't like because you think it will look good on your resume. Isn't that a little like saving up sex for your old age? I probably should have said romance there, but I wasn't sure we'd all get it. We can edit these videos. Yeah, good. Look, if you don't like your job that you're in right now, it's really simple, okay? One, you need to learn to love it. Find what you could love about it. Invite God, if you move in this category, being a God pleaser that walks by faith, to give you joy in the labor. Or go find a job that God sovereignly can lead you to that He will give you joy in. Because you know what? This verse says there is nothing better for a person. In this life under the sun, in this context of depression, all the rest, Solomon goes, you know, there's nothing better than finding work that you can do that you enjoy by God's kindness and leisure that you can do and enjoy by God's kindness. That's how you enjoy life. That's how you do it. It's understanding these cycles. It's being a God pleaser. And very specifically, it's being thankful to God for the leisure and for the work. If you enjoy it at all, it is a blessing of God. And I don't want to get into how that blessing will show up on your face and then others will be attracted to the faith and all kinds of repercussions happen because you actually look like Christianity is pretty cool. Wouldn't that be great? Here's what we need to understand about this book. It is a picture with a frame. And if you get this, you're going to be able to make sense of Ecclesiastes for a really long time. So you've got a frame. Have you ever seen a picture, you know, a nice picture, and then they put a really bad frame around it and it kind of ruins the whole thing? Or you have a really nice frame and a nice picture and it works? Yeah. So that's what we see in Ecclesiastes. What you have is a picture of how to live life. And specifically, it's how to walk by faith toward a generous God. It is a walk, a faith walk, under the direction of a generous God. You're going to see this. Generous. That's the picture. You know what the frame is? The frame is the grim alternative. And those two things together make all the difference. Remember I mentioned depression? I had depression. I had other things too. I was born with a genetic height malady. I was kin to my dad. And so that was an issue. My dad, one time when he was in the legislature, was in some debate and they were making fun of his height, and he said, I'll have you know, this was when George Wallace, who we knew, was in a wheelchair. And Dad said, you know, I'm the only senator in the state of Alabama that can stand flat-footed and look Governor Wallace straight in the eye. That's what I grew up around. Didn't affect me much at all. I had a knee surgery back in high school. I snapped this medial ligament, and they operated, and I thought I was going to play football, and then the genetics thing, and then, well, I go to college, maybe in my mind, and that didn't work, and so I could talk. So what, lawyer, preacher, lawyer, preacher, lawyer, preacher. Went to law school, found out they remove your heart the second year, so I went, nah. And slowly I build a core of enemies, you know, the lawyers and the engineers. It's a death wish. To this day, when I walk, I'm so grateful. When I run, I'm so grateful. Because I have the contrast of having a period of time in cast that I couldn't walk or run. Couldn't do anything. Depression. Here's what happened. I was depressed and cynical. I had friends talk to me. I was awful It got awful. My life was awful. God used it to bring me to himself, which was a huge help. I got married, fell in love and got married. That was a huge help. But I still had this nagging depression. And then I went to seminary. And seminary we also call cemetery for reasons that will become evident someday. And there, you know, every day, all they're showing you is how ungodly you are and how stupid you are. That's all it's about. They don't mean to be doing that because you're studying the Bible. But, I mean, these people really know it. You go, how does this work again? And they're godly and you're sitting there not. So I'm depressed and I'm recognizing this. And I had this very bizarre idea one day that I would take one day a week and take a break from thinking about myself. One day I would just quit being self-critical and talking about myself, about my life and my this and my that and why this is this and my family and blah, 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 blah. You know, I'm just going to take a break. Man, it was like, I think it was Mondays. And Sunday, I could just live it up and think about me. And Tuesday, man, that's coming. And I write, maybe make some notes about what I'm going to think about on Tuesday about me. But Monday, not about me. And in that moment, in God's kindness, I got the cycle working again. Because I was just fighting, never feeling bad and only feeling good. That's a recipe to be an addict, by the way. Because I didn't get cycles. And God in his kindness allowed me to see that break. And since then, he's been unfolding how to be joyful in work, how to be joyful in leisure, and how to thank him the whole time. That's for you too. Lord, thank you for this moment, for the opportunity to think together about truth. I don't know where everybody's coming from. I don't know what they're struggling with or hoping for, but I do know this, that your word's true. And anybody that dares to believe it and start thanking you in that meal and thanking you in that part of work they can enjoy will experience something new. Those who are between jobs are in a perfect spot to be grateful the moment it happens and to love the work. It is a difficult world of a lot of endless stuff if there's no you. But there is you, and we can grow as pleasers of you. And Lord, if the word's right, and I know it is, what you promised and what I've been able to experience is you just give us the ability to enjoy it as we circumnavigate the strange, choppy waters of reality. I pray you'd take this into our hearts and make us different men and women to your glory. In Christ's name, amen.